Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil, the Iceman Mendoza, a.k.a. Big Sexy to all you local Denver, Colorado people. And tonight we are joined by not one, but two extra special guests, as we have the return of the Harbertson brothers. That's right, Jordan and Casey from Mountain Ops are back. And to be honest, we don't have a lot of topics to talk to them about. We really just wanted to bullshit with them the whole time. So that's why we're bringing them back.
Sometimes, are you kidding? Dude, I got all my notes right here.
You got notes? You have way more notes than I do.
List of things that we need to talk about. So, dude, we've got things, everything from, you know, Donald Trump and what's going on in politics to, you know, the latest hunting scandals and what animals were not big enough to take, you know, all that stuff, man. So
you really have notes like that?
Dude, I'm totally just kidding. That's notes from meetings today.
I was going to say, holy cow, I'm impressed. I might need to hire you for the show. Any notes?
You need an assistant? I know Phil's so busy because, I mean, the guy – I'm surprised he's at home right now. I was expecting to be in the car, like heading up to a mountain somewhere to go kill something.
That's the thing about Phil. I mean, somebody on this show has to be able to boast bullshit and tell jokes. And the other person obviously needs to be able to hunt and know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to these topics. I'm sure you can guess which one I am.
let me tell you something about being successful hunting. You have to find the blind, dumb animals that are ready to commit suicide, and hey, the rest takes care of itself.
It's so much like dating. I should be better at it.
they're the ones that just need to be able to come out in the field, just literally like you can hear under their voice, kill me.
Yeah.
Kill me.
Don't you guys have a lot of deer up there like that in the northeast, Will, that just jump in front of cars all the time?
Yeah. We do, and I've actually hit a few with my truck, but the problem is I have yet to hit a trophy animal with my truck. I would rapidly drag it to the side of the road, ride it, go home, get my bow, drive back, and take a trophy picture with it.
Now, I don't know. Casey one time sent me this trophy picture, and he got it. It was this nice 4x4 mule deer, and Casey's in top to bottom, like, dressed to the nines as far as his polo and slacks, and I'm like, dude, you go hunting in slacks? He's like, you didn't hit it, did you? Was it just on
no,
the side?
It was.
Oh, okay, so somebody else did the dirty work. But Casey sends his picture. He's like, check out this buck I got. I'm like, what? You look like you're next to an I-15.
He hit it up way back from church.
Yeah, just got done with service.
So what do you got? What do you guys? You brought up the Donald Trump thing. What do you think of the Donald Trump thing?
Dude, you know, like, I know, like, a lot of people probably listening to this don't want to get into politics. You know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. That's why I love this country. We have freedom of speech.
Yeah, everyone but people who disagree with me are entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, you can have an opinion as long as you don't disagree with me. No, it's, I don't know, Donald Trump, man, dude, that guy's, I don't know, his hair has gotten better, it seems like. Since his apprentice days, he seems like he's got a new stylist or something, so he's doing pretty good for himself or whatnot. But I don't know, man. Like, it's crazy what's going on in this country, you know, and to have him as a presidential candidate and actually, like, winning, I think there's a lot of things that factors why. I'll tell you this. You know, Casey can speak for himself on him. I like that he speaks his mind. You know, I can appreciate that. You know, sometimes he may speak too much and may say things not politically correct or the way that you would politely say them, but he at least says what he thinks, and I can respect him for that, because it's one thing I hate about politics is you ask a question and they'll never answer it.
Here's a question. Would you vote for Donald Trump? He gets the nomination to the Republican Party. Would you vote for him?
Here's who I'll vote for. I'm voting for Phil for president. After his resume in the hunting this year, I mean, I can't think of a better man that could lead this country. I mean,
Phil,
you don't want me.
I'm
like a true politician.
You know, I mean, he's a true entrepreneur. I mean, he's got his own business. I mean, America is a business. It needs a man like Phil to be able to run it, you know? So I'm just saying, like, Phil, I know, but if there was that empty blank space on the ballot, you know, fill in the blank, I'd put Phil's name. That's all I'm saying.
Here's the thing, though. If it wasn't for immigration, Phil, would you be here?
I would not be here if it wasn't for an illegal immigrant in about 1970.
That's the flip side of this. And you know, the funny thing is, Phil, you're going to laugh at this. If it wasn't for an illegal immigrant, I wouldn't be here either. I know you can't tell it by looking at my skin, but I am part Canadian.
Yeah.
I know, right?
I would have never guessed it, man.
It's like the funny thing, right, man? It's like everybody's always looking south. They worry about them motherfuckers sneaking in from the cold north. It's like it's cold up here. We're trying to get somewhere warm.
What makes sense, though. I mean, I can now see the maple. I mean, with all that red you're wearing.
Yeah, this mapley beard.
Dude, it's top to bottom, man.
There's two things I do well, cut down wood and play hockey.
Yeah, dude.
You guys just need to change the name to Foreign Born Hunter.
I was born terrible. I was born and raised here in the United States, but I tell you what, you know, I don't know. You know, I see things a little differently from a political standpoint because of where my dad came from, you know, and he came here and he got married to my mom and very much legal, and he owns 3 businesses and pays a hell of a lot of taxes and never been in trouble with the law and raised a family that's kind of trying to follow in his footsteps. So it's one of those deals that when you put a blanket statement, like sometimes Donald Trump and other people do over certain people, it's hard to stomach. I do like you said, to me it seems like I haven't got to follow as much of the political debates, but the few kind of highlights that I've been able to see, it seems like there's not as much special interest group influencing him. It's a businessman talking up there, right? And I think this country could use some more of that, but I don't know, man. It's the whole political government game. It's one of those things that the more you start really looking into stuff, the scarier it gets.
Oh, and that's why it's like I love hearing, I don't know, I love hearing that because, like, your dad, like, that's America. What a land of opportunity. What a land of freedom. Like, Mountain Ops, for example, like, we're able to start a business and create a new space, if you will, or a new, you know, a new category or expand on it. And we did it. We've been in business for a year. And I look back and I'm like, we just decided, like, this, we wanted to do this. Like, this is something we've been planning on, but we did it. And I don't know that we could do it anywhere else but America and have the success and see what's happening because of all the amazing things that we have in this country. So I agree 100%. Like, that's what's cool is we are such a melting pot, this country. And that's what's so cool about our nation. You know, we're in the patriotic flag, even though it's got the Mountain Ops logo in it, you know, but the stars and stripes, it's a blessing. You have the ability to start your shop. Will, you have the ability to speak your mind freely, right, as you always do on a podcast? Like, where else can you get that? I don't know. It's phenomenal.
A lot of people probably think it's cheesy, but it's that old thing, a home of the free because of the brave. And I've been to a few different countries, a few different places, and there's no place I love as much as this country. And I'm the same as Phil, where my dad, like I said, he's from Canada, came here, married my mom. So I'm basically the whiter, more northern version of Phil right now, where, you know, both our dads own construction companies. They started themselves. Both Phil and I are basically following in our father's footsteps, which sometimes weirded me out how similar it is. But it's one of those things where I liked a lot of things Donald Trump says. There's that line when he was asked, why was Hillary Clinton at your wedding? And he says, because I paid her to be there. You know, that thing. Is that, I mean, how does part of you not, like, yeah, shaking your head, like, yeah, the system's so fucked up. That he's running for president right now, has literally given money to, like, all these different people, and they do him favors because of that money. And that's the fact. But then when he goes and attacks illegal immigrants so hard, and I understand I may not be in a place, you know, I'm in northern New York, I wish we could get some sort of immigrant population up here. Hiring would be a little easier because right now all kids want to do is, you know, work on computers and do other shit like that. And how many kids want to come out and bang nails? So finding a good employee isn't as easy as, you know, some of these politicians make it sound. And the thing is, he gets going on that the immigration thing. It's like, I would not be here if it wasn't for immigrants. And I'm sure there's a whole other lot of people like me who, you know, my mom's side is German and Irish. You know, my dad's side is Canadian, Scottish, English. So it's like everybody came from somewhere else. You know, the Mormons, the Irish, the African Americans, and the Chinese built the railroads. So, you know, it's the fact. It's the fact. This country's always been built by people coming over to do just what you said, to chase the American dream. And that's what America is to me. It's a place where people, I mean, yeah, we do hand things out and we do help out, but at the end of the day, you're not really getting ahead, like really making yourself successful, unless you're pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, working your ass off, and pushing yourself forward. Let's get a slap.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Well said. Well said. Yeah, no, that's what's cool, you know, and it sounds like the three of us have a lot in common in that front that, you know, our dad, Scott, he started a business with his brother, Rob, you know, 30 years ago, nuts and bolts, you know, they both just love the nuts and bolts and fastener industry. And they wanted to get into it, and they actually got into it with their dad. So they all started a business, and 30 years later, it's one of the most successful businesses in the Wasatch Front as far as fasteners. And they work with many manufacturers, and they have lots of employees from all kinds of different backgrounds. And that is just like we're talking here with your fathers as well. We're kind of that next generation, if you will, kind of for the Harbertson brothers, if you will. The name of their company is called THB Incorporated. It actually stands for the Harbertson Brothers Incorporated. So we're kind of that 2.0 version with Mountain Ops starting this with our partners and doing it. And I think that's so cool that we have that land of opportunity, and this is an incredible nation. And, you know, that's why, like, when you get into the politics and kind of like feel like you were saying too, it gets nasty. Like when you start, I used to listen to political radio and stuff like that, and it just made me depressed. It really did. And I finally got to the point where I said, you know what, there's all these rights and things that are being taken away from us as Americans, you know, and things that are being passed by the House and Senate and all these things that are happening. And I'm like, you know what, at the end of the day, I'm still living my life the way that I want to live. I still have freedom. And really when it comes down to it, I don't have to listen and do what the things that they're saying that are being passed until they come to my door and literally at gunpoint say, Jordan, you have to do this, because I live in America. I follow the rules, but I do what I want because this is the land of freedom, and I cannot follow politics because I have a very positive attitude and mentality. And every time I listen to it and try and follow it, all it does is just literally, I just go like this. Oh. Well, yeah, it's like Aaron, you know, Aaron Schneider talked about with his, you know, with the, what was it? The shots, you know, he just got depressed. You know, and if you would have listened to politics, I don't know that we'd have Aaron Schneider today. You know, and here's a guy who defended our country in the military, who fought for our freedoms that we could start our businesses, right? So, Matt, big props to the military. I'm going to plug that in right now. Like our service men and women. I mean,
like you said, much respect to them because they're fighting for a cause that some of the higher ups above them, I don't think they really sometimes it's misguided, I would say. I'll just leave it at that. The higher-ups, the agenda of why we're doing some of the things, putting some of those people's lives in jeopardy, seems sometimes misguided. But those soldiers are there, you know, to do a job, and they do it well, and they sacrifice themselves. It's like you can't fault the workforce. You know, you gotta look higher in some of those situations. So, yeah, much respect to them. And so I agree. I mean, Aaron and everybody else that served or will serve in the future, it's just, I don't know. nothing but good things to say about them.
And that's the thing. I'm friends with a lot of guys who have either served or are currently serving. And what is a very sad fact that I heard it the other day, and I don't know if this is 100% accurate, is something like 22 veterans a day kill themselves. And that's a serious fucking problem.
That's, I think it's serious, worse than that. I
think it's worse than that.
Like 20, yeah. Every 22 minutes or something like that. It's a company called Mission 22. I've only heard a little bit about them, but it's almost worse than 22 a day.
It's with 22 in there.
Yeah, it's Mission 22, and it'd be, you know, maybe we can look them up to get the facts
George
straight.
George is going to get on there, so we're not just spewing figures here. I mean, either way, if it's more than 22, that's way, way worse. If it's 22, that's still terrible. And that's actually going to bring me to a little segue here of you guys have noticed this problem and have gone and teamed up with Wishes for Warriors. Or is it Warriors for Wishes? Wishes for Warriors?
Wishes for Warriors. Brian Marshall with Wishes for Warriors. He's a retired Marine. Incredible foundation. And, you know, and we don't do it for anything as far as, like, we're looking for any kind of praise for what we're doing. It's simply just that. It's, right here it says that 22 veterans take their lives due to PTSD every day. Our mission is to end it. That's what Mission 22 is doing. Brian has that same mentality. He served overseas for many tours, and during that time he had a friend that he said goodbye to. Basically, he saw him for the last time, and his life was taken in battle. And when he lost his friend and he saw many of the others around him falling, he got back home and he's told me straight up. He's like, Jordan, like it, he's like, I was messed up. He's like, I had so many things, like war changes you, you know, the things that you do that we're out there doing, you know, it's nothing that a human can really ultimately prepare for, but that you are ready for to defend your country, your liberties and everything that we have here at home. He says, and you get home after you've been chasing humans, really fighting humans, combat, you know, face to face, and you don't know what to do with yourself, and so you start to go into this depression that many of these veterans fall into, because they come home and after they've served and done all these things, they don't know what to do. And so Brian has started this amazing foundation called Wishes for Warriors, and what he does is he identifies and finds a lot of these warriors who have lost limbs, warriors that have sacrificed their very bodies for our rights and freedoms, and are maybe having struggles, and finds a way to acclimate them back into society and to get them familiar with one of the greatest things they can do, which is hunting, right?
Game.
It's changing the target now. Instead of a human, you are chasing big game. And he started to raise money to be able to take these veterans on these amazing hunts so that they can start to experience what the four of us love to do, which is hunting, and get back into feeling a purpose and feeling that there's something there that they can do. And he's already started to see, in their short time that they've been a foundation, he has seen much success through the individuals that he has put into this program. And so as Mountain Ops, when he approached us, it was a no-brainer. I knew we didn't really have to think twice. It was like, how do we get involved? How can we be a part of this? And so what Mountain Ops is doing is we're trying to help raise funds for these veterans to go on these hunts, and then also provide them with our products so that they can both pre-hunting get in shape for them, and as well have the performance during hunting so they can have great experiences while they're out there with Brian doing these different hunts.
That's pretty badass.
it's awesome what he's got going on there, and it's exciting to be a part of that.
You guys are going to hook us up with him so we can get him on the show, right?
Yeah, I'll get Brian on the show. He's got a banquet this weekend that he's doing, and that we, Casey and I, were wishing that we could be at, but unfortunately we will not be able to be at. We got some things going on here at Mountain Ops that require our time, and then we've got some family stuff. But we'll get him on the show. You'll love Brian. Great guy. I mean, talk about a guy who's been through a lot, and to do what he's doing says a lot about his character.
Oh, you guys know us. We love everybody.
Yeah.
The other cool thing about Wishes for Warriors is Brian's got a full-time job, so he actually doesn't pull from the funds that are donated to his foundation. So it's 100% goes back to the veterans.
Yeah.
Where there's not, because, you know, some nonprofits, you know, they need capital to be able to flow and to do their day-to-day tasks of being able to do their foundations. But because he's got this full-time job and has a free schedule with it, he doesn't take any of that money. He just puts it all back to the veterans. And I think that's class act right there and pretty awesome because, you know, if you can do it, great. If not, we understand, you know, you got to pull from some of those funds. But he's able to give all of that back to them. So gets that many more guys out doing his mission.
That's cool, man. I work with a group here locally called the Freedom Hunters, and it's the same kind of deal. They're a smaller organization working with a lot of wounded vets and even some other traumatic brain injury stuff from veterans and PTSD, and they come in the range, and I'll free shooting and free instruction, and we've rigged up equipment with mouth tabs for people that don't have an arm, they're drawn with their mouth and wheelchairs, and it's a good time. But that group's the same way. It's everything that they get goes right back into the program. So to work with groups like that, I'm with you. It's easy to say yes, and how do we participate? Yeah. So
yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of the things that's been cool is as Mountain Ops has been established over the last year, is we've had quite a few veterans that have told us how by taking and using our products, their doctors have seen different results in them from prescribed medicines that they're using for their PTSD, and that they've actually been able to get off some of their prescriptions that are helping them with their PTSD. And it could be the working out, you know, the actual a desire and a drive for something. But it's we do get testimonials every so often of a veteran that's come home, had PTSD, started using the products, and went and saw a doctor, you know, to refill a prescription or just a checkup, and the doctor's like, wow, you're doing a lot better than you were 3-6 months ago. What's changed? You know, and so that's another thing that back to those veterans that it's, you know, we didn't even plan on that. We didn't know that was going to happen, but that's pretty cool that our products have been able to do that for the few guys that have been able to relay that back to us.
Well, not just that, but you guys also work with a bunch of different veterans in other ways. I recently saw, and I'm not sure if we can even talk about what service he is in, but a certain mutual friend of all of ours, a very handsome man known to carry a toothpick around very often, has recently been featured in one of your email flyers, and I think I saw him on your Facebook page and some other places, you know, and he's as legit as they come.
Man, are you talking about Lance?
Yeah, Lance. Talk about Lance.
Not the NSYNC dude, right? Not Lance.
Not Lance Bass. No,
no, not him. Gosh, what's his name?
I'm saying it. I don't even know if I'm allowed.
It's not Fanning.
I don't think you can say his name. So I don't
think it's he who must not be named.
It's a Voldemort
thing.
We'll
just call him Toothpick.
We'll call him Copenhagen Toothpick.
Copenhagen Toothpick. Who I believe is still active. I think he's just home on leave. You know, last thing we want is to be spilling the beans. All kinds of people will be coming after him and be like, oh, you're that famous dude. Something on the mountain. <thing." laughs>
Excuse me. Yeah, that is a really cool thing to see, because one of the things that I've loved about being a part of Mountain Ops and seeing this is, you know, for years, Case and I think we kind of talked about this last time when we all met, when we kind of talked about the starting and origins and the genesis of Mountain Ops. But it has been extremely humbling and very, very cool. I mean, I'm sure there are better words I could use than that. But to see, like Casey kind of is alluding to, the testimonials that we'll get from individuals, you know, wounded veterans or veterans who are taking the products, working out and experiencing more confidence and being able to sleep better at night and our overall having a better well-being, to individuals just in regular civilians, you know, and people like you and me who are out just doing our daily, you know, jobs and living our lives, to seeing their lives change because of what the products aren't changing their lives as much as they are changing themselves, and the products are helping them to do that. And by doing that, it is improving them in so many different aspects, from both their mental and their physical. And so when we get these, you know, because there's times where, you know, we've marketed for lots of companies in the past with our business, and we felt like we were doing a good job, and we did a great job. But to do what we're doing now and then to have that kind of response, I can't even tell you, like, how grateful that makes me to know that what we're doing is making a difference.
It's an opportunity. You guys have been afforded an opportunity to create – well, you have created a culture, and you're building on this culture in the hunting industry that a lot of people are into. And, you know, as the whole Spider-Man thing goes, with great power comes great responsibility. And I would say in your first year, you're shouldering that responsibility pretty damn well by getting involved with a what would the term for them be? I don't know if they're a business, not for profit. Anyways, with an organization, there we go, with an organization like that, and putting, you know, your money and your time and your effort where your mouths are.
Well, it, you know, and even in addition to that, you know, not to change the subject, but it's that, and it's that people can, I can see people can relate to you guys, right? You guys, we talked briefly before the podcast started about the hunt that you guys have been on, off and on recently, and to see higher ups in a company like Mountain Ops, like you guys are, taking multiple days, weeks off of work to chase elk in the woods, right? And hey, I'm right here. So when people see that, and like we touched on, the company is important, right? Business is important, but it's not more important than doing what we love, continuing to pursue what we're passionate about. I tell you what, since I've been in the shop, I mean, I've been hunting a lot more this year than ever. And when I get to stop in the shop a couple days before, in between when I'm heading out, I'll run across a couple guys. Oh man, I saw the pictures, you know, or I heard you on the podcast. And it's like, they don't want to know what the new bow is or what the best arrow is for their setup. They want to talk hunting, you know. And to see you guys out there and posting the pictures from the field and, hey, we got into some elk, you know, wish us some luck or whatever it is, it's like people can relate to that. You guys are real people. You know, we're all real people. There's nobody claiming to be higher up than anybody else. We're just normal guys doing our part, working hard, and then we're getting after it in the woods when we can. So I see that it's – yeah, working with nonprofit organizations and doing your part in that is essential. But as far as being able to relate, I think that that's the better connection that people are getting with Mountain Ops. It's just it is a connection there that I've seen, you know, through the social media and just talking to people.
And that's the thing. It's like to tie it kind of back to the wishes for warriors. It's like, we're hunters. Here's a brotherhood you can be a part of and instantly feel a connection and a camaraderie with these guys. And you'll have guys who will have your back and be there for you and will listen to your stories. You know, most importantly, listen to your stories.
Listen to Will's stories.
Yeah, let me tell you about this weekend of hunting for Will Bradley. I filled 2 Gatorade bottles with urine while I was in my tree stand and took a lot of pictures, which I'll probably post later, and saw 5 does. That was my Sunday of opening day of early bow season here in beautiful upstate New York.
I have a question, only because I've never hunted from a tree stand before. Does it ever get boring taking the same photo because the scenery never changes?
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'll tell you right now about tree stand hunting. Tree stand hunting is not for pussies. If you're a pussy, don't go tree stand hunting. Like, everybody can bash on tree stand hunters, like, oh, you don't need to be fit, you don't need to do this, you don't need to do that, which is true. It's true. You don't need to be fit to be a tree stand hunter. You don't even need to be a good hunter. I mean, I'm not a good hunter, and I tree stand hunt, and I've had success. But the thing is, you have to be willing to freeze your ass off. You have to be willing to be so bored that you're willing that you're forsaking all other kind of relief. You have to go with no relief. You know, your legs are tired, something's there, you can't move. You have to be willing to be still for you know, when minutes turn to hours. You have to be willing to just be as uncomfortable as you have ever been in your entire life and just keep doing it, because you maybe possibly one day might see something worth shooting. And there is no guarantee. You guys out there, you have it easy. You're going after it. You're going after it. Me, I'm waiting for it. Imagine this. Imagine this. And here's the comparison. If you're in a bar, would you either A, want to be the guy walking up to the girl, right, whenever you want to? Or B, be the guy sitting on the bar stool all fucking night long, hoping something above a 3 will come over and say hello to you? Which would you rather be?
I'm a happily married man. I can't answer that question.
Damn right you're not answering that question, because we all know which one you'd rather be.
You can answer that question, but I think y'all kind of
be a tough son of a bitch to sit on that stool all night long.
You're all married because you didn't sit on it.
But here's the difference. Here's the difference, right? Here's the difference. The greater skill lies within the man who can sit there all night long and get that 10 to come over at the end of the night.
I will elaborate on my co-host's story here.
And
as a non-experienced tree stand hunter, now, you know, I've gotten more into that game just to kind of expand my hunting season. And here I'm 3-4 hours from being into whitetail country, so I do when I can. I tell you, that whitetail game has gotten more and more intriguing to me the more that I do it, and I am not a guy to sit in place. I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the elk hunt, just to kind of talk, just, you know, strategies, see how what we talked a little bit about terrain and stuff. But when I hear when I hear elk calling, I'm the guy that shuts up and I'm beelining for them. I'd sooner spook elk out because I got too close to them, not knowing where they were, as opposed to the guy that sits back and calls and waits for them to come in, right? So that's kind of what I like to do, and I've gotten close many times that way doing it. But the flip side, being the guy that sits there and waits in a tree stand, pisses in a bottle because you don't want them to catch your scent. I mean, there's some goofy stuff that goes on in a tree stand. I'm not going to lie, right?
I just want to know, how many hours of Candy Crush do you have logged?
I do not play Candy Crush. I play Clash of Clans, actually.
And Clash of Clans.
Way more than any adult man should ever have logs in a game on his phone.
I'm just glad that you pissed in 2 Gatorade bottles and not 2 Mountain Ops bottles. I would have been a little upset at that. So Gatorade can take that.
Let me tell you right now, if you're hunting in a tree stand, you probably don't want to take Mountain Ops products, because most of them, unless they're going to put you to sleep and you only wake up when big bucks walk by, you don't want. You will be ready to do stuff, and you don't want to be ready to do stuff when you're sitting in a tree stand.
I actually experienced, on our elk hunt, my first experience with a tree stand, believe it or not. It was actually What's that?
Did it fall on you, or did you faint on it?
No, this is crazy. So Casey and I, the first week, we hiked back in 5 miles and found this meadow. And everywhere that we could look, I mean, we saw rubs, we saw tracks. It was elk country, so we were in where we need to be. We had actually seen a week before that 2 bulls in that same meadow. And so we went back there knowing that there should be some more opportunity. While we were scouting around, there was a couple wallows in that meadow. One in particular, we had actually set up a natural blind. We had put up some trees and different things to kind of create a blind. Had about a 70-yard shot at that wallow. And we noticed when those bulls came in, they came into a different one that we hadn't checked out. So we went and looked at that. While we were checking it out, there was a tree stand like 20 yards above them.
Somebody done their homework.
Somebody done their homework. I mean,
and there you are trampling all over it. You know what would be the worst thing is you look up and there's some guy with a bow looking down at you like, what the fuck are you doing
here? What are you doing here?
I've been that guy in the tree stand, and all of a sudden somebody's coming through and you're just like, come at me, bro. Just come at me, bro. So I'm going to come down and kill you. I came here to kill something. If it's you, it's you. Something's dying today.
Dude, it was so we're like, all right, we had two hunters, my brother-in-law who was a spike hunter and me who had the bull tag. And I said, you know what? This is where they came out before. So why don't I just take a risk and sit in this tree stand that's been prepared for me? And
you're poaching someone's tree stand.
Hey, man, it was there.
Dude.
Backcountry, man.
I know that's your first experience with tree stand hunting, because the tree stand hunter would never sit in another tree stand hunter stand unless they never retell the story.
I have a lot to learn, it sounds like.
Yes, you do. If you do it, you don't fucking tell nobody you did it.
We got into it. Well, I got into it. Casey went in another spot in the meadow. We had a radio so he could tell me if he saw something the other. So I needed to shimmy down and head over, you know, to the other side of the meadow to get in position. But I sat in that tree stand for
2 minutes.
Dude, 4 hours?
No, it's about 3 hours.
3 hours? Felt like four. Three hours, and I'm like Phil. I'm like Phil. My personality, and I've learned a lot from hunting with Casey, and Casey's an extremely experienced hunter, and so he's been a great mentor for me, especially on this hunt. And so Casey has a lot of styles, but when the situation is presented, he knows what needs to be done and how to go about it. In this situation, Casey said, you know what, you should try the tree stand. Like, this would be, I mean, why not?
Oh, good. Your accomplice, your crime.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, dude, get in that stand. Because he didn't.
I wanted to see him fall out because he didn't have a harness.
Yeah, that's true, too. Hey,
I go harnessless.
I sat in the tree stand. I don't know how high up. I did not have it. I was not under safety.
Here's the thing. A harness safety system is like, what, $80, $100-something? Like, forget that noise. Like, all the shit I do, I'm not going with a safety harness when I go to do all this weightlifting and bullshit. Like, I'm going to sit in this fucking tree stand with a fucking seatbelt on? Get the fuck out of here. Come on. I'm more likely to choke myself trying to pee in a tree stand with that thing on.
I did not have a seatbelt on. That's for dang sure. And I sat there for 3 hours, and that was honestly so tough because
what was funny is as we're sitting in this different section of the meadow, I mean, this was a gigantic meadow. If we would have had a gun, we could have covered the whole thing, but because we were hunting with bows, we kind of cut it up into three sections with me and another guy, my brother-in-law, and then Jordan in the tree stand. And the funny thing is we're, me and this other guy, we're kind of sitting making some cow calls and just doing some chirps, trying to sound like there's some elk in the meadow. And it starts raining, and I'm watching the rain, and it's, you know, Jordan's sitting here in the tree stand, and the rain is coming like this. I mean, it is just
straight on.
Straight on. And I'm sitting there, and I'm all covered because I'm in the pines, and I'm good. I know Morgan's good. He's in the blind, and he's covered, and I'm just like, gosh dang, I'm so glad I'm not Jordan right now.
Meanwhile, Jordan's taking it straight to the dome.
It's literally just coming straight into my face, and I put on my rain gear, and I sit there, and I'm just like, dude, this sucks.
Well, but the best part is, all of a sudden, Jordan comes over the radio, and he's like, hey, guys, I just got a weather alert on my phone, and this legitimately happened.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be flash floods in our area, so you guys are screwed.
Tree stand saves the day.
All of a sudden, I got this, like, Amber alert like text from National Forest Services saying there is going to be a flash flooding in your area for the next hour. And I just radio Casey and them, and I said just that. I was like, hey, just so you guys know, we're gonna have a flash flood, so you guys should probably get to higher ground. I'm gonna be just fine. Like, I'm just gonna ride this thing out, you know. Maybe a bull just kind of like swim by and I'll just, you know, put one in him or something. But it was tough, to say the least. It was very tough to sit with my personality, much like Phil, and the style of hunting that I'm accustomed to. I have a more deep appreciation for tree stand hunters with a very small experience that I had to sit there for 3 hours and not be able to move or do anything, waiting and anticipating the hopeful arrival of a, you know, a big game bull coming into that meadow, into that wallow, and giving me an opportunity.
Yeah, and one of the things that was rough about that was we had literally got up to that meadow, what, at about 11, 12 in the afternoon?
Yeah, we hiked in and got in there.
And we just sat there waiting and waiting and waiting for that prime time because, you know, we sat over a wall. There was something that could have come in during the day. But every night we would, at 7 o'clock, without fail, boom, you'd see something. I mean, they would just, they'd finally get out of their beds and come to a grazing area. So it's like 6:45, and I'm like, all right, 15 minutes to happy time. 6:50, 6:55. At like 6:58, a pack of coyotes come into the meadow and just start going wild. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? We have sat here all day, and Jordan's sitting up in the tree. They were, what, 100 yards from you? He could have possibly poked one, but...
I was tempted to just throw one at one of those buggers just because it was...
But they just started going crazy. Just these young coyotes just yipping at each other and howling and hooting, and nothing came into that meadow that night. So all of that time, not necessarily wasted, but unfortunately, that was the outcome of that night, was a lot of rain, and then right during prime time, pack of coyotes coming in. So you never know what you're gonna get, that's for dang sure.
And on this hunt, you know, Phil, and you kind of experienced this, I know, from listening to Aaron, and obviously the outcome of your hunt for your sheep hunt was phenomenal. I mean, you were able to get it done, but you did experience some moments, right, where you experienced that high and that low where you were almost like, I can hit anything at 80 yards. Your confidence is there. You're like, I'm shooting really tight. And then to miss a couple shots like you did, you know, you were there. You had opportunity. But I know from hearing from you, from Aaron, like you guys hunted harder than probably you've hunted in a long time. And you were aggressive. And the terrain that you had to hunt in was extremely difficult. You know, especially pursuing that animal. And we, in our area that we were in Utah, the terrain was different to us because we were used to another area in Utah where we actually hunted. We would get to the very top of the mountain and you would actually hunt the bottoms, into these canyons. And where we were hunting, when we started to talk to the locals and kind of find out some intel and started to kind of learn the area, a lot of it was, I mean, almost like road hunting.
Yeah, you could just hunt right off the road if you wanted.
Yeah, and we were so not used to that. We were so used to running, gunning, locating, doing, you know, putting yourself in the right areas and trying to locate these things and then running up mountains or putting yourselves in position. And so to do that, it was very tough. So we hunted a lot of the time the way that we would typically hunt. And then the locals just kept telling us, well, you're not seeing anything because you can't hunt that way. And we're like, how do you guys hunt? Like, is there, and they started to give us some insight. And so then when we started to listen to them and we went to some areas, we got opportunities. I can say this, you know, we talked about this in our last podcast, how much I had changed in the short time of preparation, better health choices, taking our Mountain Ops products, incorporating a good workout regimen. And the performance and everything that I experienced in my hunt, I can tell you today, like, had I not been in the shape that I am now, I couldn't have done it. Casey and I couldn't have done what we did. I can't imagine the kind of hunt that you experienced, Phil, you and Aaron, on your sheep hunt, seeing some of those pictures and the terrain that you guys had to embark on. I mean, the stuff we had to go through is tough too, but being in the shape I was in made all the difference on that hunt.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, you know, the awareness factor, that you know, it's just that most people don't realize that, you know, like Will said, oh, you don't need to be in shape to hunt out of a tree. No, but if you're in shape, is it going to be better off for you? I mean, perfect example. Last year I hunted in Nebraska. Very first time climbing a tree. Okay, I wasn't up the tree yet, and I saw a buck coming out of the tree line, and if it's some overweight guy that can barely get up the tree and is huffing and puffing when he gets, you think he's going to be able to get his bow ready and get ready for a shot if that presents itself? Probably not, you know. So, and same thing to what you guys just experienced with you know, miles and miles in the mountains in Utah chasing elk. You know, you may have hiked in 3 or 5 miles to get there, and if an animal presented itself when you just crested the top of that hill, are you going to be able to draw your bow back? You probably would be. A lot of people get up to the top of that hill, they got to sit there and take a seat for 5 minutes to catch their breath, you know, collect themselves. Well, you know what? Your opportunity may have passed, and you may only get one opportunity in a hunt like that, right? I mean, or not. So it's one of those deals. Is it worth it to roll the dice and say, eh, I'm in good enough shape. I don't need to be in that good of shape. Is it worth it to roll the dice? That's not one I'm willing to take, right? And obviously you guys aren't either. So that's where it's – the more people we can make aware of those type of situations, man, the more mountain ops we're going to sell, right? The more successful hunters are going to be. And it's just – it's one of those things that it's just – I think some bow hunters are used to being unsuccessful. I think they're used to that. You know, they've been unsuccessful for so long. Oh, I don't see that many elk. I don't see that many. But it's because – maybe they don't know the proper way to train. Maybe they don't know the proper way to scout. Maybe they don't know the proper way to tactics, right? You know, like I mentioned, I like to go after animals. This the bull that I shot in Colorado, I was at the top of this meadow. It was first thing in the morning. It was going to be a warm day, so I knew I only had maybe an hour, hour and a half in the morning to hunt. I cow chirped a couple of times, and I heard a chuckle in the distance, so I moved down, you know, 150, 200 yards. I cow chirped again, and I hear it about the same distance away from me. I said, okay, this guy's going the other way. He didn't like what he heard. He enough to where he acknowledged I was there. So I went quiet and kept going after him. Well, I keep going, and I got to where I thought he would be, and I sat there, and I just waited and waited to the point where I sat down for a little bit. And I'm like, I'm just going to hear, wait and listen, because I knew I wasn't going to cow call again. Well, he happened to chuckle, maybe 150 yards above me, you know, so I was close. And at that point, I grabbed my bugle tube, and I let out a scream, and he responded with the full bugle, like, instantly. And it was game on. You know, at that point, it's changing the tactics, adapting, being able to move. So it's one of those deals that if people aren't aware of their physical condition, their limitations shooting, you know, different methods to hunt animals, you know, different scenarios on how to, pursue a certain scenario, it's like – and that's where – guys like Aaron, you know, and other guys, you know, some other guys that we know up here, there's a couple that Aaron's done some seminars with, Chris and some other gentlemen that are kind of elk tactics. It's like, man, you need to get to as many of those places as you can, absorb as much of that information as you can, get out in the field as much as you can, and just try to learn something every time you go out, because that's where it's just, you know, it's a matter of just new things and learning and listening. So I don't know, man. Like I said, it's the whole hunting world and industry, to me, it's an ever learning process that we all got to keep evolving. And
well, it's interesting too, because, you know, one of the most common things that I either heard from individuals or that I saw people post on social media over this last September, you know, today's the last day of September. Unfortunately, this sacred month is over, but I can't tell you how many people, and let me know if you heard this too, that said, man, it was really an off, weird year. Yeah. Nothing was calling. It was hot. There was too much water early on, that the areas where I normally hunt, there was too much feed or not, you know, whatever. But it was almost like I didn't hear more than maybe 3 or 4 stories of individuals that I've talked to where they've said, yeah, man, it was like 4 days of just straight crazy rutting activity and bugles. I mean, we're at the end of the month. I haven't heard that from archery hunters, rifle hunters, or muzzleloader hunters. I haven't heard that from anyone. The thing that I've heard was there was 1 or 2 days in my hunt that they were going like wild, and that was it. The rest of the time it was quiet. Yeah. And I've talked to guys that have hunted in Utah, Montana, Colorado, Wyoming, And it just kind of seems to be the same story and over again. And so I don't know if the animals are evolving. They figured us out. They know what September means. But the reality is the, you know, I've hunted elk for about 10 years, and I feel like every year they become more and more unpredictable. Yeah. And they change. Even though I'm hunting the same areas, they change. There's similar things they're doing, but the weather's changing, the moon's changing, the water the previous, you know, spring or fall, you know, or summer has changed something. And so it's almost like you can't get just comfortable, especially if you're hunting with a bow, that you're going to go into your spot and you're just going to drop one.
Yeah.
There's guys that I follow that normally get it done on opening morning every single day, you know, every single year. And they went, you know, two and a half weeks into the hunt before they got it done. They still got it done, but they're like, man, this was the hardest hunt. And on top of that, it was maybe a less desirable animal to them, because typically they're a trophy hunter, but they're like, I just wanted meat. Like, it turned to the point where I'm just hunting meat like anything. And so it's like, you know, maybe the animals are getting smarter, maybe they're not, but a lot of times you've got to learn to cope with the situation or the opportunity that's being presented to you. And if you can't physically do that, I mean, Jordan, for example, we had hunted this area and we're sitting on a middle ridge looking over two big drainages. And this beautiful, beautiful, like everything that a person is ever looking for in a bull steps out. We figured he was probably 340 inches. We get out the video. We start videoing this guy. He's just raking a tree. And I send Jordan down to go after him. We're going to kind of ease him into where this guy's at. And me and my brother-in-law, we're just sitting there. We've got the phone scopes on him, video cameras. And we're just like, man, this is awesome. He's just raking a tree, just going awesome. And I radioed to Jordan. I said, where are you at, man? I said, and this was like first light. So I said, flash your headlamp so I can find you. And the bull is like clear up here and Jordan's clear down here. And this bull's now not raking the tree anymore. We've been watching him for 20 minutes just rake this tree. He's now kind of maybe going to make his way back to his bed or whatever. I mean, these things were leaving early. So I'm like, dude, Jordan, you got a boogie, man. You've got to, like, if you're worried about being loud, just run as fast as you can in the direction you know you need to go. Mm-hmm. And I watch his headlamp turn off, and I'm watching him in my binos, and I just see him run. And I'm like, good, good. And he's just running and running and running and running. And I get on there, I see him kind of slow up, and I'm like, dude, this thing's still making his way up the hill. Like, another bull just popped out. Another bull, probably about the same class, popped out. And I was just like, dude, I mean, this is, like, perfect case scenario. I said, how's the wind? He's like, wind's blowing right at me. I'm like, awesome. How are you doing? He's like, it's getting steeper, but I'm doing good. So I'm like, you got a boogie, man. You're still, like, 200 yards from these things. So he boogies, and he keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. Finally, he gets about 100 yards. I'm like, okay, dude, take off your shoes. Like, it's game time. And these bulls are now fighting in this meadow, and we're watching them fight and just kind of hang out, you know, kind of play with each other if you really weren't fighting too seriously. But Jordan gets about 50 yards. And what happened? You're snagged it.
I got him. Yeah, because as soon as Casey told me I was 100 yards from these bulls, straight up, I was like, 100 yards? Like, I just have to close that gap. Like, I was like, okay, where do I need to go? And he starts telling me, and I immediately take off my shoes, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go straight up, you know. And at this point, I couldn't see the bull, so I was relying 100% on Casey and his help. And I got to – he kind of radioed me and directed me where I needed to go, and I moved as quickly and efficiently as I could without making too much noise. And I got to within what was probably about 50 yards from it. I closed the gap halfway, and all of a sudden my bow snagged on a branch – and that snapped so quiet, like it just snapped. And the wind, the conditions were perfect. Wind was in my face. Everything was perfect. That snag and that snap just kind of made them kind of feel uncomfortable. And all of a sudden I get radio from Casey's like, they've crested over and they've moved off to the other side. And I was just like, oh. I was like, are you serious? Like, that was my bull. Like, that was – That was, he had everything I wanted. I ran up this mountain to get him. And
what was crazy is
I wanted to keep running. And I kind of started to, and Casey's like, no, don't pressure them because they're not super spooked. They kind of moved away, but they didn't run away. So let's let them do their thing. You know, again, me being a rookie at that, I would have ran after them. And Casey was like, let them go bed. We know the area they'll probably be in. We'll hunt them that night. And that's what we ended up doing. And we actually did something very similar to what you were talking about earlier, which is as hunters, we have to be able to hunt and adapt to the circumstances or situations we're in as they present themselves. And that night we did what we thought was going to be. We're like, okay, they're going to probably come over from their beds, come over and feed in the same area they were. So let's set up in what we think is going to be that lane where they're going to come over. We'll take them by surprise, right? Perfect scenario. Everything's going to come in. Well, they didn't follow the script, right? And that always happens in hunting. They seem to never follow the script that we write. This is just, you play it out in your mind. You're like, this is what's going to happen. I remember sitting there and I'm like, okay, they're going to come out right here between these trees and it's going to be a 50-yard shot. I'm just going to drill that guy. And I play the whole movie in my mind of how it's all going to lay out. Doesn't happen. We're sitting there and Casey finally just goes, you know what? I don't think they're coming. We got to do something because we've got low light. We've got limited light. And that's when we changed our game plan. Casey's like, we got to start walking up this ridge. We start walking up the ridge. Sure enough, we look over and 400 yards in an open meadow, there's those two bulls right there. And we were like, and I look at Casey and Casey kind of gives this look of like 400 yards, limited light, like that's quite a lot of us ground for us to cover. This kind of, you know, so it was kind of, Casey kind of had this defeating look like this sucks. And I turn around and look at Casey and I'm like, oh, how far are they? He's like 400 yards. Like, we're running. I'm running right now. Casey's like, all right, we're running. And Casey and I took off on a dead sprint running after these bulls.
And mind you, we literally had maybe 10 minutes of shootable light.
It was crazy. We both looked at each other. I was at the point in the hunt where I was like, it wasn't desperation. It was, I got to get aggressive with these animals. If I want to create an opportunity, I've got to go make it happen. And that's what I did with Casey is we ran after that with limited light. We got into what we thought was the first meadow. Look back. We're like, can't see where we were. This is not it. So we moved to the next one. Casey threw out in that time span a couple of calls to try and see if we might keep them from moving, keep them, you know, come back. Sure enough, we get into position. We get into the meadow. We've got 5 minutes of light at this point. Like, we booked it. It was awesome. Mountain Ops is fantastic. Everybody buy it. So we get into position, and we start walking through these two trees, kind of this little lane. And as Casey steps out, his face just goes, Jordan. And I'm like, what? He's like, bull's right there. Bull we wanted, 60 yards broadside right there. Looking at Casey, trying to figure out what the heck he is. And I am still behind this tree, and Casey's like, draw your bow. So I draw back my beautiful Hoyt Nitram that, Phil, you're familiar with, and I step out, and I see him. And I did something that I learned a lesson from. At that point, Casey ranged him again, and I had one of those slider sights. I had my pin set at 30, 40, and 50, with a slider for that bottom one to adjust. And I have no idea why I did it. I still don't know why I did it. I know why I did it, but I shouldn't have done it. And it was a lesson that I learned. 60 yards with a 50-yard pin, I should have slightly adjusted up to what would have been a 60-yard pin and threw the arrow right where it needed to go. What did I do? I adjusted my slider down to its 60-yard so that I would have a sure shot and know. While this bull is looking at Casey with the limited light that I had, I drew back again, got set, and I got my pin set right on the vitals. And right as I got set on the vitals, that was it. He busted, took off. And I could have easily just drew, put my 50 on, slightly adjusted, and pulled. And we could have had a different story we'd be telling today. But that's part of hunting, is learning from the experiences. But to your point, Phil, we would not have had that experience had we not adjusted based on the circumstances. If we had not got aggressive and, like you do, ran those bulls down as best we could.
Phil's the Iceman. He freezes them in their place.
His new name is Phil Iceman Running Bull.
Phil, how many things you killed this year?
Oh, no, we got a mute.
Is he muted?
He's muted. I can't hear him. Can you hear
him? You got me?
He turned his microphone off. It's going to be hard to tell us how many animals you killed, Phil.
Sorry, I killed three. I've killed the sheep and two bulls.
Damn, that's why he's the Iceman, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, sure. You know, Maverick may be the better flyer, but Iceman won the trophy.
No, and go to, like, last year, you know, we talked about how warm it was this year and how elk weren't really responding. Last year, in my opinion, in Colorado, it was the opposite. It was foggy. It was rainy. It was cold. And we had elk respond. I had the second morning of the season, a 280 class 6x that I passed on, facing the ground, feeding from 56 yards out to 80 yards. And I just let him walk. Because the area I was hunting, my brother and my uncle had gotten into numerous 300-plus bulls the years before. So I'm like, I know they're in here. If I shoot this 280, I'm not going to get a chance at a 330, right? Let him walk. Next weekend, I would say probably shot opportunities at less than 60 yards at about five bulls that were in that 250 to 280 class range, past all of them. Well, last two weekends of the season – nothing, you know, and it was one of those deals that you want to be a trophy hunter. That's the risk you take. And I've never really considered myself a trophy hunter. It was.